Welcome, and thanks for joining us at Hangar 46, the Air and Space Power Centre's podcast for the Royal Australian Air Force. At Hangar 46, we discuss a range of topics from emerging air and space power challenges, international relations, technology, ethics, culture, and so much more. We have an impressive lineup of guests. I trust you'll find them informative, at times provocative, and most importantly, entertaining. If there's someone you think we should invite to Hangar 46 for a chat, please reach out and let us know. Find us online at Air and Space Power Centre. Thank you and enjoy the episode.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Captain Peter Ice. I'm an Army Signals Corps officer currently posted within Space Operations Branch at Space Command. And I'm here at Hangar 46 with Group Captain Sleeman as co-host for today's episode.
Good to have you here, Pete, and thanks for joining us at Hangar 46. Today's guest is a career Army officer with over 30 years of service. He has held command appointments at all ranks, deployed on numerous operations and posted across Australia and overseas. In 2023, he was appointed Commander Space Command. Major General Greg Novak, thanks for joining us at Hangar 46.
Excellent, mate. Good to be here. Thanks, mate.
We'll start off by talking about who is General Novak. So who were you as a kid growing up? What made you join the military? And after 30 plus years, how can you still serve?
Yeah, okay. Well, look, pretty nondescript sort of childhood. I was born in Penrith, just outside of Sydney. I did a little stint in Adelaide as a toddler and then moved to Canberra with my family in the late 70s, early 80s. Did all my schooling through Canberra. Father was a police officer of the Federal Police. Mother was a secretary at one of the local universities. Two sisters. I went through school here in Canberra in the public system. Finished up, tried university for a year, wasn't really for me, and at that time had always had an interest in serving, I'd always had an interest in Army, but like everybody who has a sort of passing interest in service was immediately fixated with being a helicopter pilot, so I went into Defence Force recruiting, would have been probably halfway through 93, and started that conversation with recruiting, and ended up at Duntroon, ended up doing an allocation into Signals Corps. Your preferences change as you get more perspective on the organisation, and Signals is where I really wanted to be. And just talking about that, because it does speak to my career going forward, I was really drawn to Signals for a couple of different reasons. The first one is I felt it was an enormously wide spectrum, and Pete may have some views on this. You could be as tactical as in the Special Forces Signal Squadron or in a Combat Brigade Signal Regiment. You could be as strategic as the Network Operations Centre out at HMAS Harman. You could do electronic warfare. There were long-term schooling opportunities. There was Divisional Signals Regiment. It was a really broad canvas of different opportunities, and that really attracted to me to the Corps. The other thing was, in full transparency, I wasn't sure how long I was going to serve for. And I thought that perhaps a career in signals, you might do 5, 7, 10 years, but at the end of it, you have some pretty readily transferable skills to move into something else, perhaps even still in defence in a civilian role. So that was my thinking for it. But gosh, I've got to say, once I got into the Corps, it was absolutely everything I wanted it to be in that niche area of brigade combat signals, supporting formation manoeuvre, working as part of a combat signals, and being on the brigade plans team, working at formation and divisional level very early in our careers was something really, really up my alley. Very blessed to work with some wonderful bosses throughout my career, great mentors, great role models at operations officer, OC and CO level. So that's sort of the basis when you hit a point in your career where you realise it's absolutely where you belong, it's what you want to be doing. So that was my signals background. I guess moving forward from that, you do your time in your core trade. For me, that finished up as commanding officer of 1st Combat Signal Regiment back in 2012, 2013. And when I finished that time, it was a period of about 6 to 7 years in non-core roles. So I did some military assistant jobs, some chief of staff jobs, some secondments outside of defence into other government agencies, and got some exposure to our alliances. I'm very fortunate to do 2 years over in the US as a liaison officer. So that was the broadening part of the career. Without going too much into the detail now, it might be a follow-on question, but I think that time in the joint space was probably the start of my progression towards where I am now in Space Command.
So you've been Commander Space Command for around 100 days now. Has it been what you thought it would be prior to starting the role?
Look, yes, it has, and that's all good news, because I was incredibly excited about the opportunity to come to the job. I knew it would be contested. I knew there were opportunities for the other services to pull candidates forward. I wasn't sure how I would go. I felt I had enough of a background in space to be dangerous and therefore in the room, but wasn't confident I'd be the pick. But the more and more I thought about it, the more I engaged with career management and with my higher commanders, the more excited I got by it. I just think it's a really, really dynamic place to be at the moment. There's a lot going on. There's a clear strategy for it. I will give a shout out. I remain in awe of what my predecessor, AVM Roberts, and the team achieved in such a short period of time to build what she did in the climate we were in and resource pressures we were in terms of facilities, establishment, a strategy. Obviously building on work that had been done by the wider enterprise to define why we needed a Space Command. But yeah, it really is. I sort of, without using the cliche, but it's true, you sort of wake up at the start of each week and come into work, and it is exactly where I want to be in defence. It's what I want to do. I think I can value add to it. I would not ever classify myself a space expert, but I mentioned in that background I did some time in the United States for 2 years. That was at US Strategic Command, which is one of their global COCOMs located in the middle of America. And that was back before Space Force and Space Command existed in the US enterprise. And US Strategic Command, therefore, as the global COCOM, had carriage and responsibility and accountabilities for space. So in the time I was over there, I was on a lot of space exercises, a lot of space tabletops, was involved in alliance engagements and embassy engagements and counterpart engagements that were all based around space, with some other things too. And I really saw that that the value of that domain approach. Then came back to Australia, did some time in our Chief of Defence Forces office before promotion and out to the Defence Network Operations Centre at CIOG. And one of the parts of that, which I was particularly engaged in, was the ADF Satellite Operations Centre out there at Harmon, where a whole bunch of our space-based communications, both military, commercial, allied, and so on, all come into play, and they're all controlled and managed out of that facility, and you really do see an operational focus there that matters to the deployed force. I used to use a line, that what we did out of the DNOC, and a large part of that was SATCOM, everything from, ships at sea, planes in the air, troops in the field, submarines underwater, was all coming through that. So a great opportunity to engage with allies and partners, engage with industry, see some of our space experts in uniform and in our public service doing what they do so well. So coming from that background of those two jobs, between the two of them over 4 years of being around space and being in the space enterprise, making some relationships with industry, making some relationships with our partners overseas, getting to know some of the deep space experts we have in our organisation, was another thing I was really looking forward to coming into Space Command, just to reconnect in that environment and hopefully bring some of that experience as well as some operational context from non-space roles as to how we might best bring the domain to bear in support of the integrated force.
So you talk about you're in awe of where the command was under AVM Roberts. Where are you planning on taking the command under your leadership?
Yeah, so I think I've got the real responsibility now to build on that foundation that was laid so effectively. And for me, I'd paraphrase it. It's about operationalising and maturing the command. That's the command piece. There's another part to which is the wider domain. But I might just speak to the command first, because that's where my commander's intent for this year focused. I think really it's about what do you want to do with the command? And I got some pretty clear direction from General Fruin, my boss, that we need to bring the domain forward as a peer or with parity to the other domains. So just like we have a fleet command, we have an air command, in Army we have Forces Command, a Special Operations Command. Now we're Space Command. So what should we look like going forward? What do we need to keep growing toward? So that restructuring or functioning, aligning the organisation to follow the functions that we need. So that's one thing I've called it sort of organising, structuring for success, reorganising our headquarters. So that's a body of work we started in January. It's still maturing. And we are challenged because we don't have all of the people I would like to fill those co-functions. We're doing the best we can with what we've got, and it's working. So I want to take the headquarters and the command as it exists now and just do everything I can to make it similar to the other environmental and functional commands that we have across defence. The other thing I want to do is we have a space strategy. A lot of staff work, a lot of analysis, a lot of thinking went into that document. It's pre the Defence Strategic Review, and it's pre, obviously, because it hasn't dropped yet, but the National Defence Strategy, which will be with us soon. So you can look at it and say, all right, maybe we need a new strategy. I have looked at it. Look, there are some areas in it which it would probably benefit from nuancing, but I think it's probably still a 90% solution. I think if we want to mature the domain, we have to keep working to realise the space strategy, and that talks about things like capability uplift, workforce, you know, the identity, sharing awareness of space across defence and the government. So that's the second piece. So we've got the headquarters structuring for success, realising the defence space strategy. We've got to do that. That's direction upon us. The other part ties to that operationalising piece, and I think it's all about making sure that we do everything we can to integrate space into the integrated forces, so that we're not just seen as an enabler that bolts on to help land, air and maritime or cyber. We're actually a domain in our own right, and we may come to that a bit later on too if it's of interest. That means having standing relationships at Joint Operations Command, standing relationships with other environmental commands. It means having a deliberate process for exercise design, planning, execution, and then after action review, so that you learn those lessons and take it forward. It means leveraging operational relationships with our allies and partners to making sure we've got the most coming out of our combined training opportunities. And I think as well a deliberate way in which we might approach force generation, so how we get our space forces ready for tasking should defence or government ask us to go and do something. And I think at this stage the best way we can get after that is we already have a very active collective training cycle at Joint Operations Command across the organisation, those big exercises like Talisman Sabre. Rather than doing a bespoke progression of space exercise, I want to plug into those type of exercises and make sure space, right from the word go when we're starting to design exercise objectives, is at the forefront of people's minds and we're showing what we can do and then learning from that just like everybody else is. So, just a read back, it's the headquarters structures, realising the strategy and operationalising and integrating what we do as a domain contribution.
So, as you just said, space is now seen as an operational domain in its own right. Are you able to define for us what that means to you and why you think it's critical that space is seen as a standalone operational domain and not just an enabler to the traditional three of sea, air and land?
Yeah, and don't forget cyber. I think there's probably two parts that I'd answer. The first one is the DSR told us to do it. It's very clear about the operational domains and moving forward for an integrated force that draws on all five of them. The other one too I think is interesting. I look at the space domain and we talk about operationalising, okay? When we talk about space, I think it's super important for us as space practitioners. When we talk about the domain, we're not doing it in a way where we just have internal conversations to each other, okay? Most important part of our discussion, engagement and thinking on the domain is not what we convince and tell ourselves, but how we message that to the rest of the integrated force. I think if you take that approach, space it's got similarities and parallels to the other domains. It's got geography, and in that geography there's key terrain, it's got weather, it's got your own forces, it's got competitive forces, it's got what you'd call the equivalent of non-combatants, but your commercial, it's got a whole range of growing threats. Some of them come from weather, some of them come from debris, some of them might come from competition, but all of those things, when we start to think about space and operationalise it, you can see the parallels there with the land domain or the maritime domain. And what are we trying to do? Well, we're here to assure access. Okay? We're here to protect our interests. And one of the best ways we can do that in space is to promote security and stability, right? So it's that parallel to the other domains that I think is the first one. But also, if we want to go back to operationalising, if we're not speaking the same language as the other domains, if we're not viewed as with parity and as a peer of the other domains, then we run the risk of talking past each other. So that's why I think it's a domain. The DSR has told us it is anyway, and that's the logic behind why that's so important for what we do.
So space in itself clearly isn't new, but our use of it as a domain and the capabilities we have in space are relatively new compared to the other domains. Has the advent of those capabilities, is that helping standing forces like Australia has or the United States has, or is it more helping grey zone actors or non-state actors, giving them more capabilities than they otherwise wouldn't have had? So it's kind of a more advantage, bigger advantage to them, or is it a bigger advantage to us? And what should we do about that?
Yeah, okay. I think you would say that as we get more active in the domain, it doesn't matter, in my assessment, whether you're a major power, a middle power, or an emerging power, or perhaps even a non-government entity. It's presenting both opportunities and challenges. It's one comeback perhaps to the opening part of that question. It's the command is new, the domain is new. Yeah, look, it is in the way we've just described it, absolutely, Slim. I get that. But I sort of look, when I talk about Space Command, and I might draw on this as a parallel to your question, a lot of people say, oh, you know, you're so new, you know, what are you getting after? Look, the command is new, no way about it, just over 2 years old, and you know, we're proud to be here and moving very fast. But there are what I would call throughout defence long-standing pockets of excellence that have been in the space enterprise for a long time, some of them in several, over 20, 25 years. They are organisations or parts of our organisation that include our capability acquisition group, you know, in the way in which we procure space capabilities. Or we mentioned before the Satellite Operations Centre out at the DNOC at Harmon. I mean, that's been going for 23, 24 years now and is incredibly well established with allies, partners and industry. Even down to frequency and spectrum management. You know, there's obviously that touches space, and there's a part of our organisation that for many years has looked at that in terms of satellite landing rights and how we allocate our frequencies, and how we might make sure that we're not impacting other means of communications or operations while we're doing so. So there is, it's not a greenfield deployment, I guess, when you start to look at Space Command and the domain. It's been around for a while. And when I talk about the opportunities, have a look at the way in which we do ISR, look at the way in which we communicate, our targeting processes, positioning, navigation and timing. You know all these things. Anyone who's got a passing interest in space knows these things are there, but they are the opportunities. They are the capability add-ons that traditionally the major powers have drawn from space. I think what you're describing is that now we're seeing, to use a general term, but I think you'll get where I'm going, that the cost of entry into space is dropping. So, you know, you don't have to be a major power anymore. You can launch a CubeSat. You can set up some ground-based infrastructure to talk to things in space. You can do all that much cheaper and much more readily than you could, you know, 15, 20 years ago. You don't even, as I said before, have to be a state-owned entity. You know, there's huge turn in commercial space at the moment, and that's proliferating into the market as well. So I think that's probably my view on that question. There's opportunity and challenges across the board, whether you're a major power or a small to medium enterprise in business. That's a good thing. That's why this assured access, security and stability is so important for us, because it just underpins so much of what we do nationally and as humans, as well as militarily.
So you touched briefly on industry and commercial entities in space. How would you describe Space Command's current relationship and knowledge sharing with the Australian space industry, as well as academia and any domestic research institutions?
Yeah, okay. It's the ultimate team sport would be my short answer to that question. Why is that? Well, it's big, it's global, it's got lots of different facets to it, lots of different mission sets that make a space enterprise work, and trying to do anything on your own is going to be a significant undertaking. I've been really lucky since coming into this job. My counterparts at the Australian Space Agency have been very engaging with me. I have a regular touch point with the head and most of his senior leaders. I've visited them twice. That is our avenue into whole of government. And we work through other parts of defence to make sure that is an interdepartmental approach that touches everyone who's got stake. So we're very well connected with national through the space agency and through defence as an enterprise or as a department. In terms of academia, I think it really does matter. So much of what we're doing in space is changing so quickly because of the pace of research development turning into tangible outcomes that can be applied. A lot of that's happening in our universities. A lot of that is happening in universities around the world. I like to, where I can, visit universities. I spoke recently at ANU in one of the courses they were delivering for personnel interested in space, and I'd like that to continue. I think hopefully through engagements like this podcast, maybe we're reaching out to student bodies and academic faculties, get a better feel for what it is that we're doing and where we're heading. Industry, so I, as you would probably be tracking, Pete, the space capability branch, the part that looks after our major projects and our big capability acquisitions, that's been elevated up to Joint Capabilities Group level. That's no longer part of Space Command. That now sits in Joint Capabilities Division. And that's where most of the industry engagement for those types of projects and acquisitions and business opportunities goes. But interestingly, that doesn't mean for a second that I'm not a super keen stakeholder in what industry is doing. I like to understand what's on the horizon, what's being developed, what's new, where might there be opportunities for us to leverage, where might we get a better read for what it is that our allies and partners are doing with their industries. So I will meet with industry partners quite regularly, probably a couple of times a week I'll do calls with different industry people. I'm very upfront with them and say that, you know, if you're looking for the next business opportunity or advice on a capital acquisition, that's over in capability division. But while ever they're willing to spend time with me, I'm very keen to accommodate that, because quite selfishly, it helps me develop professionally and personally. And through those engagements, mate, my takeaway after 100 days is we have, here in Australia in particular, a very innovative, vibrant and active domestic space industry. And they are competing and succeeding in markets outside of defence. And they are competing and succeeding on the world stage because what they're doing is just that good.
So just to continue a little bit, sir, with the collaboration point, how is Space Command currently coordinating with our international allies and partners to enhance our current space situational awareness and space domain awareness capabilities?
Yeah, well, and you would know, I'm sure, from your work, mate, it is an underlying theme of everything we do. When we talk about focus areas for the domain, it's one of the standing ones, is we have to bolster and expand these relationships. So for allies and partners, it's a combination. For many of our major partners, we will have a series of regular bilateral, so us and them meetings. On some of those, we will explore things like combined training, combined exercises. There might even be an opportunity for combined operations if our interests align and we have the policy settings to do so. That's one facet of it. Then we are part of a number of what we would call a multilateral forum, where a number of countries that are like-minded come together. The Combined Space Operations Program Initiative is probably one of those, the best example of that, where you've got a bunch of what you'd classify as like-minded nations that have interests and stake in space, and they unify and come together around the prospects of a rules, norms and behaviours in space that are responsible and appropriate. Everything we can do to maintain security and stability in space. And the reason we do that is because we're all interested in ensuring access to space for us as a collective, and we can do that much more effectively as a collective than we could perhaps as individual countries.
You spoke a minute ago, sir, about space being the ultimate team sport.
Mm.
The Defence Strategic Review from 2023 talks about becoming a more integrated force, noting that Space Command moved from the Air Force to Joint Capabilities Group in 2023, and it doesn't exist as a service like the Navy does or the Army or the Air Force. Has that made it easier to integrate into the ADF? And what can the ADF learn from the Space Command?
Yeah, I don't see not being a service as a limitation at the moment. And I mean, again, I'd come back to the Defence Strategic Review recommendation is what saw us move into JCG, but I think for all the right reasons. For me, it's a logical progression of the history and heritage and lineage of space. You can see the logic by which it was raised under an Air Force domain lead when it was first stood up. But at the same token, as you look at what the DSR is trying to achieve, and as you highlighted, this focus direction for a focused force, an integrated focus force. And to fully leverage the joint contributions to that, you can also see the logic there of a JCG transition. I don't want to speak for General Frewen, but I do think it's fair to say that what we're looking at doing with much of our efforts to sort of bed in that change and draw as much as we can from the opportunities it presents, it's to approach things in a service-like way where we can. We're not a service. There's no pathway to that specifically, but what we are doing is service-like. So I mentioned before about force generation, I mentioned before about how we might approach analysis of a domain and bringing our contributions to bear. That's service-like. You can extrapolate that further and say, okay, well, we've got DSR direction to make sure that we have a professionalised and bounded space workforce. And in that workforce, we've got entry paths, we've got training continuums, we have progression pathways for people to progress through ranks and pay scales while they're in the domain. and, you know, a professional military education underlying piece that follows that too, in terms of experiential learning, so people in the command get exposed to these sorts of things. That's all very, very service-like as well, and really does speak to my mission, which now the capability branch has moved out to Joint Capability Division, is very much, I'm a train and prepare organisation. That's what I do. We take forces, we take them out of ab initio training, we train them further individually, we then leverage collective training opportunities to generate force elements, and then we hold them a requisite notice and move for tasking. So that's, again, if you think about what a service does or a functional command does in one of the other services, that's what we're doing. So it's not a limitation to us. I think the transition is logical, presents a bucket load of opportunities, and probably the one I haven't spoken to is that we're now under the same group headquarters as the cyber domain. And again, if you look at all of the domains and their integrations and their touch points, when you look at space and cyber, they are particularly tightly woven. So having them under the 1-3-star and having me with General Duncan as a peer 2-star, that's a really good thing too that comes out of the group change.
So, sir, sort of tied to the group change, and as you mentioned, space and cyber being tied in under General Fruin, a question that I'm particularly invested in, there's no current category or specialisation or core within the ADF regarding space as a career pathway. So what measures are currently being taken to develop and retain the sort of highly skilled workforce we need to operate within the space domain?
Yeah, no, it's a good question again. So I think there's something we can do right here and now, which is on all of us in Space Command. Where we've got space workforce employed, we've got to do everything we can to make sure it's a positive service experience for them. So they've come in to do a job. We want to make sure that we can gainfully employ them doing the job they joined to do, so that when they come to work each day and down the bays or logging onto their terminal, there's a sense of satisfaction there. So that's the first one, a positive service experience in the space domain. Now, there is a longer-term answer to this. So as we grow the domain, and I spoke before about confining my answer to Space Command, but this is probably a good one. There's a space enterprise across defence that really helps us realise the domain approach. Not every single space-related field of employment or position in defence will be in Space Command. So part of what we need to do as well as we talk about professionalising that workforce and making sure we're doing everything we can to give the basis for a way forward on the establishment's categorisation, is we need to actually bound what that establishment looks like in defence. Where do we need space skill sets? Do we need some in CAS-G? Do we need some at JOC? Do we need some in Cyber Division? Do we need some at Headquarters First Division in Brisbane? You know, there's a bunch of places where I can see real value in having space expertise. We're going to be responsible for generating the people that fill those positions, even though we won't own them, they won't be in Space Command. I think as we do that, so we've got our core skill sets in Space Command, we're giving them a positive lived experience. At the same token, we've got some longer term work to bound what the space establishment looks like, create opportunities across defence for people to come into space. And then that allows us to send the demand signal to Defence Force recruiting, to our training organisations, helps us validate those training programs and progressions that we've built to make sure they're delivering the skill sets we need. So again, I think we are probably on a pathway that in the fullness of time, you might find that we do have some musterings and some categories that are space specific. In fact, that's work we're looking at right now. I think, though, in terms of, you know, what's that going to be, what sort of timeline, it's probably a watch this space at the moment.
Space is a popular topic, and there's a lot of people that are excited about space and the space domain. And you just mentioned Defence Force recruiting. What advice would you give someone who may be interested in joining the military with a focus on space? What should they do?
Yeah, I think the first thing they do is go and see Defence Force recruiting. That's the first thing they do. I mean, and don't wait and don't think, oh, it's too early and I don't know enough about it yet. No, that's you should absolutely go to recruiting because they'll help you answer the mail on some of those things. And we've got work to be done here. And you know, we're looking for the best and brightest young Australians out there to come along and be part of what we're doing. It's exciting, it's worthwhile, and I think you know, the offer speaks for itself. So that would be my first thing, is go to DFR. Likewise, Slimo, if there are people in the organisation already who are thinking about a pivot point in their career, or have looked at some of the opt-in correspondence that's gone around, my best message to them is don't leave the question unasked. Go and speak to your chain of command. Or when the time comes, depending on your rank and mustering, and you get time with your career management agency, just put it on the radar, see what they come back with. But that's my message. Don't think about it, don't do anything about it. If you're thinking about it, go and find out some more, because the opportunities are there. And you know, that's, you don't want to be kicking yourself 5 years down the track that you could have done it earlier. So that's my first message. I think then I'd offer back to that as well that if you are still in school, you've got a whole bunch of different avenues open to you. You've got your parents, you've got school counsellors, you've got teachers. If there's a particular area you think is related to space that you're good at or you're interested in, talk to those people about how you might lean into that. And, it might be a science, an engineering, some sort of aerospace field. If that's your passion, that's what you want to do, talk to those people, get better informed, and then have the discussion with DFR as well if you think that might be something you can satisfy in defence.
So we've spoken a lot about the sort of here and now and the near future for space and the space domain and the ADF. Where do you see the space domain and the ADF being in 10 years' time?
I guess I'd go back to the vision sort of statement I spoke to before. Where's it got to be? It's got to be operationalised. It's got to be integrated. It will have to be a bit bigger. And we can't just sit on our hands with the capabilities that we have available to us now. We've got to look at modernisation and continual uplift. Technology is offering so many opportunities. Capability branch are all over them. Our allies and partners are working with them. We need to keep pace with our allies and partners as well as we do with competitors and potential threats so that we can keep contributing to this global enterprise that is so important to what we're doing. So, yeah, I think if we've done our job right, mate, that's what we're looking at, is a domain that is no longer ever being referred to as enabler. It's a domain in its own right. It's fully integrated with standing relationships into Joint Operations Command and the other domains. And it is a trusted and valued partner in the global space enterprise with our like-minded partners and friends.
Righto, sir. Ready for the rapid-fire questions? The tough part.
Okay, fire away. All right, let's go. It is literally rapid-fire, right?
It is. Short answers.
Okay.
Number one, past or the future? Which one are you travelling to?
Oh, this will sound terrible. I'm a nostalgic guy, mate, past.
Your biography lists that you're into most forms of motorsports. Anyone in particular?
Used to be V8 supercars, but now they've narrowed the field too much. So touring cars, production car racing, and street stock drag racing.
You've had a few postings to Canberra. What's the most iconic Canberra thing?
Fog.
Favourite place you visited whilst posted to the United States?
Yellowstone National Park.
What's one thing still on your bucket list and one thing you've ticked off?
Tarja Tasmania Rally is on my bucket list, not done yet. I'd go back to my Yellowstone National Park, was on my bucket list from when I was a kid.
Favourite Australian slang?
I like rhyming slang, China Plate, Bo Peep, that sort of stuff. So.
Palmer or Palmy?
Palmy.
What's your greatest motivator?
Not letting my team down.
What do you wish you knew or learned sooner?
Don't sweat the little things.
Greatest fear? Sweating the little things.
Orb spiders at night.
Finally, what's your go-to karaoke song?
Oh, Slim, I'm not sure I want to unmask that. It's Meatloaf, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
Awesome. Well, General Novak, it's been an absolute pleasure having you here at Hangar 46 for a chat. So thank you very much for joining us.
Slim, oh, great. Thanks so much. Appreciate the time. And Pete as well. Thanks for the questions, mate.
No worries. Thanks,
sir. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us at Hangar 46. We'll be back again soon for another chat, but in the meantime, follow us online at Air and Space Power Centre to stay up to date.